Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Aquila podcast. We skipped last week because it was Christmas. Hope everyone had a great holiday. We are on episode 13. And for today, we have a special guest. She is a doctor, I believe. Right, Jen? You're a doctor?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I just wanted to double check. And we're going to ask her some questions about the fitness industry and just how her career is. And so Jen, where did you grow up? Where's your origins at?
So I grew up about 30 minutes outside of New York City, a small town called Ardsley, New York. So lots of time traveling into the city, traveling out of the city and whatnot. But I grew up playing a bunch of sports, specifically soccer and lacrosse were my two big ones. But yep.
That's awesome. So your love for sports kind of just like took you into the fitness world realm, I guess?
Yeah, I played sports all growing up. And then when I went off to college, I no longer played soccer. And so college was when I really started diving into fitness as opposed to sports, and getting into the gym and learning about resistance training and cardio and all of that stuff. So my love for fitness specifically kind of developed once I went off to college and was no longer playing soccer and trying to stay fit mm-hmm. somehow.
So going from a high school into college, was there ever any other kind of option or career choice you had in mind, or did you already know that you wanted to go into it right away?
So it's actually funny because I started college undergrad as an education major because I wanted to be a teacher. And after about 1 year in that major, I realized I do not want to be in a second grade classroom teaching children. And so I'd always had that love for sport. So in the back of my mind, I was like, all right, great. I'll go into physical therapy. So I was pre-physical therapy for a while. And then once I started personal training, I got out of that prehab or that rehab mindset and got more into the prehab and how you can help prevent people from actually going to physical therapy.
Yep. About the same thing. I would say I started off in nursing. Nursing, I feel like, was more of a family thing for me. So I ended up going to the physical therapy. But I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. So when did you end up going back to school for your doctorate? The next question we had for you is what degrees you have. So I was just curious, like, what age did you decide to go back and all that? Because I don't know if I'm ever going to go back, but I never want to, like, rule it out, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So I did my undergrad. I did my undergrad in kinesiology. And then when I graduated, that's when I worked with Aquila at the NRC. And I was there for a full year. And after about 4 months or so of working, I realized I missed school, which I never thought I would say because I was so excited to graduate. And if you told me I would end up, you know, going back for my PhD, if you told me that years ago, I would not believe you because I was so ready to be done. But then, so I took that year off. So in 2014, I guess, 2014, 2015 is when I went and did my master's. And my master's is in health promotion and nutrition. And throughout my master's, I really focused on sports nutrition. And that was a 2-year program. And so right from there, I started my PhD in exercise science. And that began in 2016. So I took a year off before going back to grad. But once I did my master's, I went right into the PhD after. There's never too late of a time to go back to school, I'll tell you that. I was probably one of the younger ones in the program. You see a lot of adults taking time off to work and kind of get their lives together and figure out the path that they want to take. Because I will say, when going back to do a PhD, you have to absolutely know what you want to do with it. Like, people don't just do it for the fun of it because it's certainly not a fun 4 years of your life. So it needs to be something that you're passionate in and something that you won't mind spending the next four years of your life devoted to.
It's funny you say that, Jen, how you miss school, because I'm starting to miss school too. And I've been out of school for about a year. And I miss learning new things. I still research and stuff, but I still miss the school aspect and studying, which is kind of weird. I guess I'm a bookworm, but
Yeah, and I never thought I would. And it's funny because when I worked at the NRC, once I realized how much I was missing school for our, I think it was we did, you know, weekly meetings on a Friday or something. And I was like, can we do like a research sharing section where like each week someone brings in like a new research article and we could talk about it and stay on top of fitness, especially because fitness and nutrition is constantly changing. And so I kind of brought that back for a little bit because, yeah, I'm the same way. I missed it.
So when it comes to fitness, what are like your favorite like aspects of it? Do you like particularly one part of it from the cardio, maybe the resistance training, any like one thing that you like prefer personally?
Yeah, absolutely. Resistance training. Resistance training will get you the benefits above anything else. I mean, of course, depends on the type of goal that you have. But for someone who's looking to lose fat or change body composition, resistance training is going to be the key type of exercise to do that. Also, within resistance training, I like to incorporate a lot of eccentric training and working on time under tension, because time under tension goes back to, you know, energy systems and are you taxing the right energy systems for fat loss, and what, you know, what substrate are you using in the gym? Is it carbohydrates? Mm-hmm. Is it more fat based? Is it more, you know, creatine based, etc.? So I do a lot of eccentric training to work on hypertrophy for my clients, especially those fat loss clients, because working that glycolytic energy system. So a time under tension of anywhere from, you know, 40 to 60 seconds or so has shown to be best for fat loss and hypertrophy, increasing muscle mass and whatnot. So definitely resistance training and definitely eccentric training within that. So I'm a big believer in kind of actually switching the physical activity recommendations by the CDC. Like the CDC is, okay, you know, 5 days a week of aerobic-based exercises and, you know, 2 days of muscle and bone strengthening. And I'm a true believer that it should kind of be opposite, where the majority of someone's program should be resistance training based, and cardio should of course be thrown in, but more as a supplement to one's program, just because we see the wonderful benefits that resistance training can provide.
I agree with that 100%. I've been more of a resistance training type of guy, but back to the energy source you utilize in the gym. I've seen a bunch of different articles about fasting cardio. Is that like one of the best ways to lose for fat loss, or what is your thoughts on that?
That's a great question. No.
No. Okay.
So you know, that's a huge myth too. To be in a fasted state, you'll burn more fat, and that's not incorrect. You will, however, your workout is going to suffer as a result of that. Because if you're in a low intensity cardio state, that's fine. You will be burning fat, because fat is the only substrate. You know, we can't burn fat anaerobically. Mm-hmm. You can only burn it aerobically. So the second that you become in an anaerobic state, as a result of high intensity exercise, you have to burn carbohydrates, or you have to utilize your ATP-CP energy system. Your body physiologically cannot mobilize fat to provide you that energy. So what we see a lot of times is that workouts, high intensity workouts, will suffer when our glycogen stores are not complete, and you're forced to rely more aerobically to use the substrate fat for energy. I'm a non-advocate. I feel very much against the ketogenic diet, especially if you engage in high-intensity exercise, because your workouts will absolutely suffer, because carbohydrates are going to be the main source of energy for those high-intensity exercises. So do you need to be in a fasted cardio state to burn fat? Absolutely not. Will you burn more fat as opposed to carbohydrates? Yes. But in terms of fat loss, it doesn't matter whether you're burning carbs or you're burning fat for energy. What matters is total caloric expenditure. So, if you're exercising at 50% of your you know, VO2 max, and maybe you're burning more fat than you are carbohydrates, your total caloric energy expenditure is going to be much lower than if you were exercising at a higher intensity, burning more carbs as opposed to fat. So I think that's kind of a big myth, in my opinion, that people often think they need to burn fat to lose fat, and that's not actually the case. They just need to burn a heck of a lot of calories.
Yeah, that's I love that. I've been like telling my clients that like they always, especially during the holiday season, they're like they fell off the wagon a little bit, and they're like, "What's the best way to do it? Should I do a keto diet?" And I say no to that because I learned that in undergrad that keto is not the best way to do it. It's not sustainable, and that's yeah.
And this is what boggles my mind. So the ketogenic diet. So actually, when I was an undergrad, when I took a ride, it was like a writing for medical professionals class. And that was my first exposure to research and what actually kind of made me interested in going back to grad school. But I was looking at the ketogenic diet. I had never heard of it before. But the ketogenic diet was originally developed many, many, many years ago as a way to treat childhood epilepsy. So the ketogenic diet was prescribed to children to prevent seizures. So the high fat that was consumed would produce ketones in the brain, which would decrease brain excitement. And decrease brain neurotransmitters, which would actually calm the brain and prevent these seizures from occurring. So when you think about it that way, you're like, how in the world did this diet that was prescribed to help children prevent seizures turn into this diet for weight loss over the years? And it really is crazy because there's so much false information, you know, online about the ketogenic diet and whatnot. But carbohydrates are such an important part of our diet that it especially people who exercise, that it hurts me. It hurts my heart, I always say, when people are cutting carbs from their diet. And I love talking about myths, but one of my favorite myths are just diets in general, like intermittent fasting. People swear by it, or paleo or keto, and these diets don't work because, you know, you're changing something physiologically in your body. It's not like the ketogenic diet magically changes your body to drop all this weight and burn all this fat. The only reason diets work, it comes down to a simple math equation, right? If you're in a calorie deficit, you're going to lose weight. So if you're burning 2,000 calories a day and you eat 4,000 calories of broccoli, let's say all you're eating is broccoli, but if you're in that 2,000 calorie surplus, you're going to gain weight. It doesn't matter that it's coming from broccoli, you know, a healthy vegetable. You're in a surplus, so it's going to add weight to the scale. Whereas, you know, if you are burning 2,000 calories in a day, but you're only eating 1,000 calories, and those 1,000 calories are coming from pizza, you're going to lose weight because, again, you're in that deficit. So it's not, you know, our society has become so diet driven because everyone wants a quick fix that we forget the basics of weight loss and weight management and body composition. And it comes down to a math equation, right? We need to be burning more calories than we are consuming, and kind of go back to the basics there. And then we can incorporate foods from there that fit our lifestyle, right? More carbohydrates if you're more active, and maybe if you're more sedentary, you cut back a little bit. But there's so many benefits from grains, like fruits and vegetables. They're carbs, right? We don't need to cut those. Any diet that says cut fruit, cut vegetables from your diet, that's a red flag for people. They provide so many vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, which help with our daily functioning, that it seems silly when we kind of just go back to the basics and think about it.
That's awesome. Matt is actually so we did a nutrition podcast episode maybe a month ago, and Matt was saying all these terms, all these energy systems. I haven't been in school in 3 years. It went right over my head. So I know Matt is sucking for this stuff.
No, I'm learning. Like, I'm learning so much. And I remember stuff from, I took an exercise physiology class my last semester, and it was definitely harder. It was like some biochemistry with some medical terminologies type of stuff. It was cool.
Yeah, and I get, I teach nutrition at Springfield College, and all my students, they're like, wait, but I didn't think we'd be learning about science in nutrition. I thought we'd just be learning about foods and what to eat and stuff. And I'm like, no, like, nutrition is a science. And I mean this in, like, the nicest possible way, but, you know, it's not an opinion. I don't care whether you think carbs are good or carbs are bad. It's science. It's facts that carbohydrates are good for us. They give us vitamins. They give us minerals. And it, like, energy systems is one of the biggest parts of weight loss. In terms of, especially from the avenue of sports nutrition, you fuel athletes dependent on the type of energy system that they're using for their sport. So I'm with you, Matt. I'm a big, big fan of energy systems. I think it kind of fuels everything with training and nutrition. So it, all of that science stuff is so cool to me. And that's what allowed all of this information when I was going through school to really click and be like, oh my God, like, it actually makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense. And I like learning about the science behind everything. So what I do makes sense. Then I can teach others about it, like why you're doing this and why this is a proven
exactly.
fact. Yeah, I graduated with a health science degree because I just like science. Like, I love kinesiology, so I didn't do that, but I did more of a science route because I was like, maybe I do PA school, I'm not sure. So I learned about organic chemistry and molecular biology, and I kind of tied that in with I had a focus in kinesiology, so like I learned about nutrition, all that other stuff.
Yeah, and that's awesome. Like, if I went back and I told my high school physics or bio teachers that I got a PhD in exercise science, they'd be like, wait, science, you? Because I was never a science person growing up. But then when I went to college and connected bio to the human body and exercise and nutrition and things that I loved, suddenly it all made sense and everything clicked. And I'm like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah, it's so cool. That's why I want to go back to school. So definitely gonna maybe this year or next year, I'm not too sure, but figure it out for sure.
Is there a specific topic that you're interested in?
Not exactly. I think I do like health administration. I know it's not as much sciencey stuff, but it's tough because I like science, but also like health administration. Like, I feel like it helped in that field too.
Not
for sure. So another question for you, what advice would you give someone wanting to pursue a career similar to yours?
The biggest piece of advice I'd probably say is don't say no. Like, get exposed to as many experiences as you can. If you're interested in, you know, if you're interested in getting started in nutrition, take a nutrition class, take a certification, find a nutritionist or dietitian that does something that you want to do, and reach out and network and just ask to shadow or volunteer. I spent so many hours at different types of facilities, just volunteering and watching and seeing what the professionals were doing to see if this was something that I wanted to do or a location I wanted to be in. It's all about networking and getting comfortable with being uncomfortable and reaching out to people and just you know, putting yourself out there, getting exposed to different, because there's so many different avenues within the fitness and nutrition industry. So trying out all different types of jobs and not being intimidated by the work that it might require.
I love that, being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that kind of has got me to where I am today. Like, you have to embrace it. You're never going to get better in your profession if you don't make yourself uncomfortable, whether it's training a different type of population or getting new certifications or going back to school or doing a presentation or, you know, whatever it is, that those are going to be the experiences that really will get you to where you want to be and get better.
That was something I struggled with. I remember, at least in high school, presentations wasn't the best, but my major in college, I probably did at least 20 presentations throughout, and I finally got like confident and good at it, and that definitely translated into
Public speaking is.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, what was that? I was going to say public speaking is one of the most terrifying things. I mean, even in grad school, I would be so timid. And then, you know, in my PhD, I mean, I was forced to do many, many, many mm-hmm. presentations. And now I love it. I love public speaking. But gosh, all throughout my undergrad, I wouldn't even raise my hand in school. But just taking the different opportunities to get up and practice and fail and do bad and learn from that definitely made me better and more confident mm-hmm. speaking now.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't be afraid to fail. That's what I've been learning for yeah. sure. Try new things.
Yeah, I I failed many a times, but it helps.
I think we asked you most of the questions we had prepared, but I think me and Matt might have had a few questions pop up in our head as we kind of went through a lot of these. So I guess we're just going to put you on the spot for the next few minutes. So when it comes to like no a problem. Client going back to fitness or even yourself personally, are there like a staple of exercise that you kind of like to like your go-to exercises for either yourself personally or for your clients?
Yeah. So one thing that I actually avoid a lot with my clients, at least in the beginning, are single joint exercises. So I'm a big compound person, like squats, no matter your fitness level, no matter your age, no matter anything, like you are going to be squatting. Mm-hmm. Am I going to, you know, during a 60-minute workout, am I going to have you doing calf raises and bicep curls and tricep extensions? Probably not. Not that I think bicep curls and tricep extensions are bad by any means, but especially for someone who is more of a weight loss, fat loss kind of individual, we want to work multiple muscle groups, our big muscle groups, from a caloric expenditure standpoint, but also from, you know, an agonist, synergistic kind of standpoint. No matter, you know, whether you're, you know, if you're benching, you're hitting your triceps in there. So you're still working that. Once you get a little bit more advanced, or, you know, with my clients, I say, once they fine tune their goals a little bit, I'll incorporate more single joint stuff, like, you know, your bicep curls, tricep extensions. I personally will never put in calf raises in a workout. It's one of my most hated exercises in the fitness industry, but, I'll incorporate it once it gets a little bit more fine tuned. But in the beginning, my staples are very much multi-joint, like I'm always going to have someone squat. I'm always going to have someone bench. I'm always going to have someone RDL. Always going to have someone row, some type of, you know, shoulder press, some type of vertical pull. So those are probably my go-tos right off the bat for a very general template. And again, once they fine tune it more, I'll incorporate a little bit more of the, you know, the single joint targeting exercises, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. So the last thing that kind of popped up in my mind earlier when you were bringing up time under tension, especially targeting the energy systems, and it could promote more fat loss. How about as far as strengthening purposes versus like progression, overloading, like on a weekly basis, increasing your weight every week? How do you combine increasing weight versus time under tension to gain strength? Or what's your thoughts on that generally?
Yeah, good question. So typically I'll keep time under tension the same. So from week to week, let's say you're doing to kind of restabilize and go back down.
Hey, Matt, can you hear me?
A 7-second repetition.
Yeah, I think she's cutting out a little bit.
Hey, Jen, can you hear us?
Oh, do you want me to repeat that? Can you hear me? Yeah, can you hear me?
I think you're hitting a rough signal spot. Yep, I think say a few things just so we can make sure you're back. Yep, you're perfect.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, lost a lot better. 30 seconds there. If you don't mind starting back from the top, what your thoughts are under like progressive overload and using time under tension versus weight progression alone. I think we missed that whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So if I'm doing time under tension, if I have that, if I have it written for someone's program, I'm typically going to keep the same time under tension for their 4-week cycle, let's say. So each week they'll be benching or squatting or whatever for the same amount of time under tension. So that I won't manipulate from week to week. It will just be the weight that I would manipulate. So I would keep time under tension consistent for that kind of block of work. So I typically would only manipulate one or the other. And by no means am I saying that, you know, if you are more in a strength phase, not everything needs to have an extremely slow time under tension. There are certainly times during, you know, a max strength phase where I'm just going to have them rep it out for, you know, two, three reps or so. But I would do one or the other. Typically it would be keeping time under tension the same and then, manipulating.
Did you have any questions that popped up into your head, Matt, along the podcast today?
Yeah, I asked her some on the way, but I have one more. So especially during the pandemic, we had especially for my clients, a lot of them wanted to, same thing with everybody, wants to increase muscle mass and lose fat. So it was tough not being able to do a lot of compound movements because we're not in the gym anymore. So I do everything virtual. So I kind of adapted my whole exercise routine, even for myself. Instead of doing just compound and cardio, I've been doing mostly body weight and HIIT style, a lot of calisthenics. And I found myself losing a lot of fat and gaining a lot of lean muscle. And with my clients, it's shown pretty good results too. So I feel like I'm going to.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, I pretty much like so my. Hello?
I hear you.
Hey, Matt, okay. Can you hear me?
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that as long as you're incorporating HIIT in there, HIIT's going to be the best type of cardio to prevent lean muscle loss. So that's awesome that you're doing HIIT, even, you know, with the body weight. That's awesome.
Yes. I do miss compound exercises, but I'm into the gym that much, but it's interesting. So I was talking to Randall about this a few weeks ago. So my last time I did a PR for a bench was in March, I guess. And I've been doing just solely body weight stuff and maybe some dumbbell stuff here and there for from April to November. And then I did my bench PR in November. My bench press increased 10 pounds. So I found that really interesting.
That's
yeah,
wild.
I found that really interesting. Solely body weight exercises.
Have you changed your diet at all?
Yeah, I'd say so. I've been eating more lean meats and not as much processed stuff. Because my diet in college wasn't that great, for sure. But now that I'm out of college, I kind of have more time to focus on and purchasing better foods for myself. So that's the huge thing.
Yeah, the key for losing fat and maintaining lean muscle or improving lean muscle, well, of course, is going to be some form of resistance training, just, you know, to preserve lean muscle, but also the increase in protein in your diet. So I'm one of the biggest supporters of high protein diets for many, many reasons. But a high protein diet, especially while being in a caloric deficit, is going to be key for helping preserve your lean muscle. Because when we're in a caloric deficit, we're going to increase our muscle protein breakdown. And so to prevent our muscle protein breakdown, the two drivers of muscle protein synthesis are resistance training and protein, leucine in particular, that amino acid. So if you're doing both of those, especially while in a caloric deficit, that's going to be most beneficial for preserving the muscle that you have. And of course, with the resistance training, it's hard because of COVID and this pandemic, but the HIIT type of cardio is going to be Keen has very similar adaptations to resistance training in terms of the EPOC and raising our metabolic rate and whatnot. So we see some really good benefits with that. So yeah, protein is going to be one of the most important parts of losing fat while maintaining the muscle that you have, or even increasing the muscle that you have.
Did you have anything else, Matt?
Yeah, it's so cool. Super interesting, like all muscle protein synthesis, all that stuff. I think that's it. All
right.
Yeah, I think that's all the questions I've had.
Is there anything else you wanted to add, Jen, or mention or say, or do you think we covered everything?
I'll just say my last thing with holiday weight and everything, you know, everyone wants to lose weight, and with New Year's resolutions coming up, one of the big things to remember is weight that comes off fast will come back fast. So we really want to promote slow and steady weight loss, because when you lose weight rapidly, like what happens with the ketogenic diet, is that it's water weight. It's coming from your muscle. And so we want to aim for the research and the science is telling us that a weight loss rate of 0.7% of your body weight is ideal. So, you know, for someone who's 150 pounds, that's just about 1 pound per week. Anything faster, we run the risk of losing muscle, losing water, and not actually losing fat. So, you know, just an emphasis out there for people. We always want instant gratification and we want to lose all the weight immediately. But when we try to do that, we end up gaining it back. It's not actually suitable. So just nice and slow. Be patient.
That's how my clients, consistency is key, because if you stay consistent, you'll see results.
Exactly. Everyone wants a quick fix. I mean, I do too, but that's not the
way
it works.
So thank you for coming on today. It was definitely helped me learn a few things, and I'm sure it helped Matt learn a few things. And
absolutely,
we really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. It's been awesome to talk to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jen.
That's going to conclude our episode for this week, and we'll see everyone next week, and everyone stay safe.